Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Overtime Exemptions and the Distributive Canon Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 2, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Encino Motorcars v. Navarro, a case on its second trip to the High Court regarding a dispute over the interpretation of the Fair Labor Standard Act's overtime pay requirements and whether it exempts service advisors at car dealerships. Congress enacted the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, in 1938 to protect all covered workers from substandard wages and oppressive working hours. And it requires overtime pay for employees covered under the Act who work more than 40 hours in a given week. The FLSA exempts from this requirement, however, any salesman, partsman, or mechanic primarily engaged in selling or servicing automobiles, trucks, or farm implements, if he is employed by a non-manufacturing establishment primarily engaged in the business of selling such vehicles or implements to ultimate purchasers. Hector Navarro and other service advisors filed suit against their employer, Encino Motorcars, alleging that it violated the FLSA by failing to pay them overtime wages. Encino countered that as service advisors, Navarro and the other plaintiffs fell within the FLSA exemption. The district court ruled in favor of Encino, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed, relying upon a 2011 regulation issued by the Department of Labor and indicating that service advisors were not covered by the exemption. The Supreme Court, however, thereafter vacated the judgment of the Ninth Circuit, determining that the regulation at issue was procedurally defective and remanded the case for the Ninth Circuit to reconsider without placing controlling weight on the DOL regulation. On remand, the Ninth Circuit, using the distributive canon of statutory interpretation, held that the FLSA exemption did not encompass service advisors. The Supreme Court again granted certiorari. By a vote of 5-4, the Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Ninth Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Thomas, the court held that service advisors are exempt from the overtime pay requirement of the FLSA because they are salesmen primarily engaged in servicing automobiles. Justice Thomas's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Alito, and Gorsuch. Justice Ginsburg filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. And now, to discuss the case, we have Tammy McCutcheon, principal at Littler Mendelson.
I am happy to be back before you today talking about Encino Motorcars versus Navarro in its second trip to the Supreme Court. Encino is about a rather obscure exemption from the overtime requirements of the Fair Labor Standards Act covering, and I need to quote precisely from the statute here, any salesman, partsman, or mechanic primarily engaged in selling or servicing automobiles, trucks, or farm implements. For those of you interested in studying the exact language of the exemption, it can be found at 29 U.S.C. Section 213b10. The Encino case explores whether this exemption applies to service advisors at car dealerships who interact with customers and sell them services for their vehicles. Now, stop now. Don't turn me off. Both Encino decisions have broad implications beyond this exemption and beyond the FLSA. Encino 1 is an important case on deference to agency action that should soon begin to show up in administrative law casebooks. Encino 2, which we're talking about today, is equally important decision on statutory interpretation. So now that I have you listening again, let me back up to Encino 1, which was a challenge to regulations issued by DOL in 2011 that reversed some 33 years of the agency recognizing that service advisors were exempt under this section of the FLSA. In 1970, here's the history, soon after Congress had enacted this exemption, DOL issued regulations stating that service advisors were not exempt. But that interpretation was rejected by the Fifth Circuit in 1973 and the Sixth Circuit in 1976. After these decisions, DOL issued an opinion letter in 1978 explaining that service advisors were indeed exempt under this section. So from 1978 to 2011 was a time period during which Congress enacted nearly a dozen amendments to Section 213, but made no changes to this exemption. And during that time period, DOL continued to follow its 1978 opinion letter, including incorporating that opinion into its field operations handbook in 1987. Then, surprise, in 2011, DOL issued regulations that did a complete 180 and declared that service advisors were not exempt. In Encino 1, issued in 2016, all nine justices declined to give Chevron deference to the DOL's 2011 regulations. The court, reversing the Ninth Circuit, invalidated the regulation as procedurally defective because it undermined significant reliance interests in the automobile industry without a sufficiently reasoned explanation. However, the court stopped short of reaching the merits on whether service advisors were exempt, remanding instead to the Ninth Circuit to make that decision. In that case, in 2016, Justices Thomas and Alito dissented from the remand as they wanted to go ahead and decide on the merits. Of course, as could have been predicted, the Ninth Circuit found again that service advisors were not exempt, and the case went back to SCOTUS for Encino 2. In Encino 2, Justice Thomas delivered the opinion for the court. He was joined by Justices Robert Kennedy, Alito, and Gorsuch. Justice Ginsburg dissented, joined by Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Not surprisingly, Justice Thomas's decision focuses on statutory language. Justice Ginsburg's decision focuses on legislative history. Back to the statutory language. Any salesman, partsman, or mechanic primarily engaged in selling or servicing of automobiles. The Ninth Circuit invoked the distributive canon of statutory interpretation, that is, applying each expression in disjunctive phrasing only to its appropriate referent, to conclude that despite the three disjunctive or phrases in the statute, the exemption only applies to salesmen who sell and partsman mechanics who service, but does not apply to sales employees engaged in servicing. Justice Thomas rejected the use of this distributive canon where, one, the statute does not allow for one-to-one matching, as here, the distributive canon would mix and match some of the three nouns, salesmen, partsmen, or mechanics, with one of two gerunds, selling or servicing. Justice Thomas doubted that Congress would leave it to the reader to figure out the precise combinations that define the exemption. Second, Justice Thomas stated, an ordinary disjunctive reading in this case is linguistically possible. Here, the phrase salesman, primarily engaged in servicing automobiles, not only makes sense, but it is an apt description of the work of a service advisor, as described in the case. Third, a narrow distributive phrasing here is an unnatural fit because of the entire exemption bespeaks of breadth. It begins with the word any, and it uses the disjunctive word or three times in a single sentence. Bottom line, the majority of the courts in Encino 2 has narrowly restricted the use of the distributive canon in statutory interpretation, preferring the ordinary disjunctive reading of the word or, so or really does mean or, absent very special circumstances as reflected in the statutory language. But I'm an FLSA geek. This is obviously important. It is principles of statutory construction, which is going to be important beyond the FLSA. But I, as an FLSA geek, do not see this as the most important aspect of the decision. As I mentioned in my prior SCOTUS cast, I was hoping that a majority of the court would finally and firmly set aside the oft-invoked principle that exemptions from the FLSA must be construed narrowly against the employer. They did that. Narrow construction of FLSA exemptions is dead. Quoting Justice Scalia in Reading the Law, the majority said this: because the FLSA gives no textual indication that its exemptions should be construed narrowly, there is no reason to give them anything other than a fair rather than a narrow interpretation. The narrow construction principle relies on the flawed premise that the FLSA pursues its remedial purposes at all costs. We thus have no license to give the exemption anything but a fair reading. Wow. Justice Scalia wins. I cannot overemphasize the importance of this short paragraph. Every plaintiff's brief and every court decision in every FLSA misclassification case begin with a statement of the narrow construction principle. Now that is gone, and courts who want to deny an exemption can no longer lean on this as a crutch. When employees appear to fall within the language of an exemption, courts no longer have an excuse to put the thumb on the scale in the employee's favor. It's going to be interesting to see whether this will change the balance of exempt versus non-exempt decisions, and really how it's going to affect ongoing litigation. If, for example, a district court had recently issued a summary judgment decision relying on the narrow construction principle, are the defendants going to go back in and ask for a reconsideration? But beyond the FLSA, it's going to be interesting to watch whether the court's rejection of the narrow construction principle will be applied to other statutory exemptions and statutory exceptions in employment law or any other statutes. Are we seeing a sea change on the idea that an exception must be interpreted narrowly where the rest of the statute is not? The idea that you are going to be interpreting FLSA exemptions fairly, not narrowly, I think should have a significant impact on the litigation. Finally, circling back to my original SCOTUS cast, I was hoping that the court would address two other issues: whether the DOL's 1978 opinion letter should receive our deference, and the retroactivity of court decisions that reverse longstanding recognition by the agencies of exemptions. Neither the majority nor the dissent discussed our. Another day, perhaps. Justice Ginsburg did address retroactivity in an effort to downplay the reliance interests and the impact of yanking this exemption away from the automobile industry. It's an effort that I think failed. She referenced the FLSA's good faith defense that protects employers from retroactive liability for actions taken in good faith on agency guidance. Under this good faith defense, a court can order an employer to reclassify an employee to non-exempt going forward, but they're protected from all monetary liability. Justice Ginsburg stated that this defense would shield employers from retroactivity if the court had construed the exemption properly. In other words, she posited that the car dealerships would not owe back wages if the court had decided that the exemption did not apply. But here's the problem. The good faith defense applies only to agency guidance, not court decisions. DOL changed the guidance and effectively revoked this exemption in its 2011 regulations. Thus, from 2011 forward, car dealerships could not invoke the good faith exemption because the guidance was DOL's regulations saying that the exemption did not exist for service advisors. So sorry, Justice Ginsburg, I think you got it a bit wrong. Had the court affirmed the Ninth Circuit, every car dealership in the country could have been found liable for up to 2 years of back wages plus an equal amount in liquidated damages.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUS Cast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.